On today's episode of The Good Word, Dan Titus joins me to discuss Steph Curry being out for a week with a hamstring injury. Where will the Warriors be when he returns? Jimmy Butler and Buddy Hield, the buddy cop drama we didn't know we needed. Anthony Edwards needs to regroup. The Pacers taking a huge lead over Cleveland. And some of our biggest surprises in these playoffs. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into today's show. We are, of course, on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you get your audio podcast. It is Wednesday. It is the aftermath of Game 1 of the Western Conference semifinals. It is the aftermath of Stephen Curry grabbing his left hamstring, which means DNP. Old. With that said, my man Dan Titus joins the show. Man, how you doing, Dan?
What's good, Vin? How you been?
Better than Stephen Curry. I'll tell you this, dog. I was ready. I had, in the words of Della Reese and Harlem Nights, I had my mouth ready for some hash, and now I can't get no hash. I was looking forward to either Ant literally taking out another monument on the NBA's Mount Rushmore of today. I was ready for it. Or I was ready for Stephen Curry doing his, you know, Muhammad Ali rumble in the jungle. You know, I'm going to take out this young bull. And then he pulls his left hamstring, which I didn't realize, Dan, was before the floater. I thought it was on the floater with 8:46 to go in the second quarter. He wound up going back and forth one more time down before walking himself to the locker room, actually jogging. And let's get into the brass tacks of it. He's going to miss at least a week. And with these games going every other day, that means the earliest, Dan, that he can come back is game 5 in Minnesota. What do you think the series will be by that point, by game 5 in Minnesota?
It's probably going to be 2-2. I think the Warriors can possibly get another one here. And it's really because the Steph injury, as detrimental as it could be, the Warriors just seem like they're just locked in right now. And whether you go from the Jimmy Butler, Buddy Hield, you know, chemistry that they have on, off the court, this team is just locked in. And defensively, they're just putting on a masterclass these last two games, holding opponents to under 90 points. I mean, the way that they're, sure, three-point variance matters. The Timberwolves are going to make way more three-pointers than they made last night. But I think it just speaks to the Warriors just making people uncomfortable. Led by Draymond Green, and everybody stepping up. Like, you're not going to get – the Warriors continue to get these outlier performances from the Buddy Hields, Draymond Green, even Steve Kerr going that deep into his bench, which he's never done throughout this postseason. This team just looks like they have the experience and they know how to win. So if they're going to have to cover the loss of Steph, they at least have a couple of different ways to attack it. And I think it starts with Jimmy, who wasn't great, but – ultimately, when it came down to the fourth quarter, he was the one that slowed them down, combated those runs, and kind of got them to at least execute enough to pull out the victory. And, I mean, I don't think anyone would have expected the Warriors to win that game, game one, on the road, losing Steph in the second quarter. Like, that's just a team that's just showing resilience that I think that they can keep this close and have Steph come back by game 5.
Or you're playing against a team that decided, hey, we're going to do Looney Tunes tonight. Because that's what the Minnesota Timberwolves were. Now, yeah. I'm going to get into how dumb the Timberwolves played. And I honestly thought that they had grown themselves out of that. They did not. But I want to start here because there's bullet points I want to get to. A, LeBron James, old. You saw what happened with him. MCL. Damian Lillard, old. Tore his Achilles. Career will probably never be the same, whatever he has left. And now you have Steph with a hamstring. We keep saying that these old guys are wonders and, oh my God, look at how much longevity they have. And then reality comes and hits you in the face. Like, this is a young, experienced man's game, because you can be young in Oklahoma City, and you saw what happened there. So it's not just being young gets there. And it's not just being experienced, because you can just be old. You got to be at that sweet spot. And whenever you build a team around the prospect of a 37-year-old Stephen Curry being healthy for an entire playoff run after he emptied the tank in Game 7 two nights ago in Houston. I want to say this was bound to happen, but you're playing with fire. And this is not, damn, this ain't the Warriors' fault. They can't control the schedule. You know what I mean? Like, this is not their fault in that way. Maybe they took care of business in Game 6. You have a couple more days rest, that sort of thing. But Houston's a good team. I'm not going to take any credit away from them. But like you said, when you build a team around an old person being healthy, you can't say that the Warriors are now unlucky. This is part of the stuff that's baked into the equation. This is just what it is. Now, this is why you acquired Jimmy Butler. Right. To some degree, because Jimmy's numbers and Andrew Wiggins' regular season numbers kind of look similar, but you know that they're different sort of tiers of ball player, especially when you get to this time of year. Jimmy didn't play great, but Jimmy was defending Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert and grabbed those offensive rebounds and hit those shots up against the shot clock and controls the game as a ball handler. Like, one of the things that's very underrated about him, I think, Dan, is that he is one of the best pace controllers in the league. You're always going to get a very good shot. He's a low turnover guy. He's not a high usage guy. Now he's going to have to be high usage guy, which he doesn't want to be on this team because he wants to be, you know, Alfred or Robin or whatever the hell, you know, that is. But I think he's going to have to go back into his Miami Heat bag of being the guy the past, you know, three or four postseasons when he was with them that had to carry undermanned teams through playoff rounds against, you know, superior opponents.
If there's one person to do it, I think you'd want it to be Jimmy Butler. And I think that that's what's playing into the Warriors' favor here. Granted, I don't think that the Wolves aren't going to look like they did last night. Like, I mean, they just reverted back to much like the Boston Celtics. Both these teams shoot a ton of three-pointers. That's what their calling card is. And Anthony Edwards, I think you saw him shift into the second half to being more downhill, getting to the rim, getting those easy buckets. I think he'll start more aggressively in game two because that's what was working well.
Before we get to that, we're going to get there.
Yeah, yeah. You got some things you got to let off your chest. So real quick, back to the Warriors then.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like at this point, the Warriors are going as far as Draymond. So I think the dynamic between Draymond and Jimmy is a unique combination that I think can at least hold the line because defensively, their ability to switch everything, the rotations of getting in Looney for the minutes that he needs to get in, Pat Spencer giving them decent minutes. And no one knows who this guy is. Like, he's a former lacrosse player, but like just has a heady understanding of the game. And I think everyone, it just seems like they just have a lot of adults on that side that understand what it takes to win in a playoff setting. And I think that starts with Jimmy and Draymond. Whereas on the Wolves side, you don't really have that experience yet. Now, you're taking out juggernauts on the way of these last 2 years, but this is a different team you're facing now. And to go back to your point before, could the Warriors have prevented this from happening with Steph? Not really. But if you go back to the regular season, them fumbling those last two games of the season, losing to the Spurs, your situation could have been different. You were playing the Lakers in the first round instead of being a play-in tournament, playing a couple games, and then going into the round, a tough first-round matchup of a team that probably wears you down in the Houston Rockets. So you can't control your future, but like you – I don't know. It's a tough thing. And like it just sucks that he got hurt in the second round with a hamstring strain, which isn't going to be easy to come back from.
Yeah, it's the butterfly effect. You know what I mean? Like you change one thing, you change everything else. Like I know that was a movie that I didn't see, but I understand the premise of the butterfly effect. Two Americas. I don't know if any of y'all have seen it, but I ain't seen it. Right. All right, cool. Now, I think your point about Draymond and Jimmy, those are the two most experienced high leverage players on this roster. Right. And defensive anchors, I think it's really important that they are defensive anchors because you've got the Moses Moody's that's going to have to play. You're going to have, will they have to dust off Jonathan Kuminga for extended minutes? Man, that boy looked lost every time he out there. Every single time.
This is the one time he's got a chance to do something right and he just can't get right, yo. Like, I just don't.
if he can't get right from a life, I'm just that baby right, bro. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm sorry. Look, we are doing
Bernie right there.
We are doing our best Looney Tunes because that's how the Timberwolves played yesterday, like Looney Tunes. But back to the words as we finish this up.
Yeah.
Draymond Green hadn't hit 4 3-pointers in a game since 2017, the 2017 playoffs against the Utah Jazz and Rudy Gobert in a playoff game, mind you. He hadn't hit 4 threes in the playoff game. He had 5 game 2 of that series. He hit 4 where I felt like the Timberwolves, in a way of trying to keep Gobert out of the action, they don't play Gobert up on the screens. They try to keep Gobert as close to the paint as possible. And then you play the percentages with Draymond Green because he's not the three-point shooter that he was in 2016 when he basically opened up the entire offense for them. Doesn't always have the legs anymore. But once he hits one or two, do you tilt your defense? Probably not, right? You say, Draymond, if you hit 2 threes, all right, cool. The numbers say that you're not going to do more, except he did more. And they needed that when the game felt like it was going to get tight. But the game never felt actually tight when you have a 53-33 lead, and now, Timberwolves, this is where we start bagging on you, right? This is where we start bagging on the Timberwolves. And we'll talk about the Jimmy Butler, Buddy Hield, Buddy Cop thing in a second. But the Timberwolves played one of the most undisciplined, poorly constructed on the floor, not from the game plan. I've never seen a more grown-up team play immature. And if we're going to start somewhere, it has to start with Anthony Edwards, right? Because we gave Anthony Edwards a lot of credit for how he played against the Lakers and face of the league and everything else. And in that deciding game 5 against the Lakers, he was like 0-for-9 from 3. And then he started this one, just 0-for-everything, and didn't score a point, a field goal, until like 8 minutes to go in the third quarter. And you're already down, and you're at home, and you're supposed to set the tone. And his coach called him out. Chris Finch actually called him out. Like, yeah. I think Ant's going to drop a bomb on the Warriors in game 2. But if they lose this series, they're going to point back to this one, Dan, and say, we lost the series because we did not approach game 1 with the proper attitude.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look across the board, not only Anthony Edwards' lack of effort, which was what Finch was talking about for much of the first half, because he sets the tone. And if he's not going to be able to set the tone, who will? Julius Randle, he struggled from the field. What he shot, like 4-for-11, really only made his game was made at the free throw line. But I'm looking at the vets, man. Mike Conley, 0-for-5. Look at Dante DiVincenzo, 4 turnovers in 32 minutes. That's uncharacteristic. That's lack of discipline. And those are the guys that you're expecting to step up and play. If Ant isn't playing well, you have somebody else to kind of step in there. But if they're not playing well, I mean, I'm just looking at, you know, 19 assists to 16 turnovers. When the Warriors turn you over like that and you're not moving the ball, that's a victory for them. So you're just making it easy for them. They already lost their best player. You got to rally around that, lock in, move the ball, get others involved, and play smart basketball. And they just weren't doing that. And that's why they lost.
Well, and the other part is, like, from a strategic standpoint, Rudy Gobert played 26 minutes. And they went long stretches with only Rudy on the floor or only Julius Randle on the floor. They could not do the double big situation that they could against the Lakers. And part of that is you got Naz Reid, who actually played well, who spread the floor and everything else. Like, it's a weird matchup conundrum for the Timberwolves. And this is more of a Styles makes fight series than we may think, where I look up and down the roster and I'm like, Minnesota's the better team. But when you consider the styles of it and the way that the Warriors play anyway, this lessens sort of the effect that Rudy Gobert can have on a series. Even though he had 3 block shots in 26 minutes, even though when he was out there, I felt like he defended in space reasonably well. There was only one play, I think he fouled Jimmy in the fourth quarter, where Jimmy got him on the left wing and Jimmy drove, and so that Jimmy does this great thing of not throwing his body in like a, you know, weird way, but shielding his body from the ball to the rim, and Rudy wound up whacking him. Other than that, I felt like Rudy played reasonably well, and I felt like Julius Randle was the guy that, after I saw him put his shoulder into the chest of LeBron James all of round one, I thought he was going to bring that same sort of energy. But Draymond Green is a different ball game in that way. Like, LeBron, for all of his gifts, right, and everything he has, as someone reminded me last night, LeBron James was a point guard when he came into the league. Draymond Green has been a power forward his entire life. He is used to the physicality, and that affected Julius Randle. Was not able to bully the Warriors the way that he was able to bully Luka and Reeves and LeBron and everybody on the Lakers. This is a different ball game for Minnesota. They're going to really, step or no step, they're going to have to play smart to win this series.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at the matchups of this game, and Draymond guarded Julius Randle for almost 3 minutes, didn't get a shot attempt off. Jimmy Butler guarded him the most for almost 4 or 5 minutes, shot 2 for 7, missed both of his three-pointers. So if you're talking about beating the Wolves, it's about, I think that they can get away, the Warriors can get away with Ant going off. But if you cut off the water for Julius Randle, Naz Reid, I think that vastly increases their chances of being successful. And then they have the defensive assets to be able to disrupt and make it difficult for Julius Randle throughout the course of this series. The Lakers' defense wasn't good, whereas the Warriors, this has become their calling card to a certain degree. And this all starts, it goes back to Ant again. You know, if he's not setting that tone and then you're having to rely on these ancillary players to step up, that just only increases the Warriors' chances here. And one thing I just want to go back to real quick, I think it kind of speaks to Rudy Gobert a little bit, but they just, and maybe this is an effort thing, because offensive rebounds generally are an effort thing. Jimmy Butler grabbing 7 offensive rebounds is crazy against that big of a lineup. And then you have Buddy Hield getting 4 offensive rebounds. That can't happen if you're going to win. So, yeah, to go back to your original point, this was an unserious game for the Wolves, and it showed by their lack of effort, energy, and just poor shot selection throughout the whole game.
Well, it's funny. For those, and this is the first time I've ever seen, and I don't know if it played on TV, Jimmy Butler was heavily booed by the Minnesota crowd.
Oh, you can hear it. Every time he touched the ball.
Yeah, every time he touched the ball, right? He was heavily booed. And you know what struck me? Draymond Green was not even booed like that. And he put Rudy Gobert in the $1 million dream sleeper hold and told him, go to sleep. And the Minnesota fans didn't have much for him. They had all their venom for Jimmy, because Jimmy, man, had the nerve to go into practice and tell Karl Towns, y'all need me. Y'all better pay me. And it pointed to those 6 offensive rebounds. That felt like that reminded me of the practice, because he didn't score in the practice. He just grabbed rebounds and had assists. And he was like, oh, this is all, even, it's still compelling. Like, even without Steph, this is still, you know, a compelling series. I don't think we were premature at all in the things that we were saying about Anthony Edwards. I don't think we were premature at all. But he is now facing a test in front of him where, and you can see a little bit in Oklahoma City, where you got 1 year where you can be the upstart. You've got 1 year where you can sort of shock everybody. But then when you get to year 2, we expect greatness. We expect you to perform. And Ant's going to have to show up, not just in game 2, because I think they're going to win game 2. You know, Golden State, and as I say that, Golden State can f*** around and win game 2 like everybody else is winning game 2s on the road, right? But you get the feeling, or at least I get the feeling, he's going to have to show up in game 3 on the road and game 4 on the road in that hostile environment and take the games. Like, I think he's everything that we say he is. I don't think he's a fraud. I don't think it's anything like that. But when you look at the numbers, you're like, man, he had 23 and he had 13 rebounds and everything else. But you look at the way he played the game, add to the fact that he let Buddy Hield get off on his watch. Like, the decisive player of that game, I believe it was a three-pointer from Buddy on the left wing where Ant just fell asleep. And these sort of plays just do just enough to give Golden State confidence to stretch a lead back to 12 or 15 or whatever it is when you're supposed to be charging. A lot of this falls at the feet of Anthony Edwards, and he's got to show up in game 2 and beyond.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to, he just got to get back to what was successful for him, and I think it's getting to the rim. In the third and fourth quarters, most of his field goals came at the rim. He's got to attack and put pressure on that back line of that defense, because you want to get Draymond Green in foul trouble. You want to make sure you're playing these guys off the floor. And they just didn't do it. They were just settling the entire first half. So it just made it easy for everyone else. And Draymond played with five fouls for a good portion of the game, too.
Yeah, he thought he was coming out with six minutes left, and Curry left him out there and took him out for like maybe a minute or two, but then brought him back to close.
And that's where it's like, you got to understand the situation. Someone's playing with his magnitude that's playing with five fouls, like, you got to attack him. So I'm expecting a different game plan. I think they're still going to jack up a lot of threes, but they're going to have to be more aggressive and put pressure on that back line, that defense, because it just seemed like it became too easy for the Warriors to just pack the paint and just let them just, hey, go off, shoot your threes. And, you know, it will regress to the mean. Like, the Wolves are going to shoot way better. But I think that was just to steal that one in that way, in that fashion, this is a great start for the Warriors. But it's far from over.
Everybody's stealing game ones on the road. And sometimes, in the case of Tyrese Halliburton, you're stealing game twos. I think it's time to talk about the buddy cop thing we got now. Buddy Hield and Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler would probably object to Buddy Hield's name being called first, so I will respect Jimmy as the elder statesman.
He had another good game, man. Except for that stupid thing you did at the beginning of the game when you have on the right shorts. It's not real Robin and or Batman-like.
Buddy, what happened with the wardrobe malfunction?
Jimmy switched it out. It was Jimmy's fault.
Okay.
Jimmy switched it out, and that's what happened. So I was looking for my shorts, and I thought it was the right one. He said, yo, put these on. It was the right... And that's
what you're going with.
Yeah, I'm going. Jimmy, it was Jimmy's fault. His locker is next to my locker. I was looking for my shorts. He says, yo, I can't find my shorts. Oh, I see there. And I put them on and it looked just alike. And after that, got a fine for it. So it's cool. It was Jimmy's fault. Blame Jimmy.
Jimmy and Buddy have this energy towards each other. It's light. Buddy Hield is very light. Right. He has energy. He's not brooding. A lot of people, you know, Klay Thompson was probably not the easiest person to be around last year in Golden State because of everything that he had in front of him with his contract and not feeling respected. You know, his body starting to betray him, all this other type of stuff. Buddy Hield comes in, and even though he's been inconsistent this year, their best lineups have featured him, especially since Jimmy has gotten there. And Jimmy is the type of player who will look for Buddy Hield on the perimeter, who will also challenge Buddy Hield into being a better defender and telling Buddy Hield, you don't need to be dribbling. You need to be catching and shooting. Because when you dribble, bad things happen. And we all know when Buddy dribbles, great things ain't happening. No. The energy that they have toward each other, I think it was necessary for Jimmy to assimilate himself into a team and a culture that he had not been in a very quick time. And the people stuff, it's hard to explain the people stuff, but the people stuff really matters, and I think is going to bear fruit over the next few games while Stephen Curry is out.
Yeah, I think it comes to like the joy that Butler was talking about playing with since he's come to the Warriors, and Buddy Hield kind of helps with that because as I was at the games in the first round, you could just see them joking with each other and just having that fun about it, but then also like having some seriousness to it because they did get into it a couple of times on the bench in game one, but it was all about what you can do to contribute to winning. And the fact that Buddy is chill enough from an ego perspective to not be offended or take some slight from it, it's just trying to get better and win. And Jimmy, we know how his personality is, it radiates through the team. And so not everyone receives that message well. I don't think it was received well in his past with certain teammates. But Buddy's so chill and understands who Jimmy is. And like that dynamic has become so crucial for the Warriors that I don't think many of the people watching the Warriors expected Buddy to be stepping up to the way that he is. But I mean, to go out in game seven and do what he did, to come back in game one and then run it right back, I mean... Yeah, whatever Jimmy's telling him is working. And the commitment that he's putting through to defense, I think also speaks volumes for how much Buddy's grown. Because he was never a defensive threat or someone that you consider someone that could be a ball stopper. But, I mean, what he was doing at the end of the Rockets series, getting, you know, three, four steals a game, ripping Jalen Green, before he even got to half court. Like, this is a different type of buddy that we haven't seen. And if Jimmy Butler's getting that out of him, all the better for the Warriors.
And I think it's important, Dan, like, for people who don't know Jimmy, and I've covered Jimmy when Jimmy was in Chicago, people who know I covered the Bulls for a few years. Jimmy Butler was just coming into his own. And me and Jimmy have had this sort of playful, you know, as journalist and player, where we would pick at each other. And you got to be able to meet Jimmy where he is. Like, he's not the bully that everybody says that he is in that way. He just will test you. And you got to be able to stand to that. And I think it's not like teammates. Everybody hates Jimmy. Jimmy always has guys at every stop that he winds up going and shooting late night with, or that he looks for on the floor, or whatever it is. In Minnesota, it might have been like Tyus Jones. And in Miami, it was certain guys. In Philly, it was certain guys. So for him to have Buddy Hield in these high leverage situations and on the floor, when you wind up switching, you're going to be switching a lot with Jimmy Butler, or Jimmy's going to be switching with you or throwing you where you need to go, whatever it is. And on offense, Jimmy ain't looking to take no threes. Jimmy is looking to draw the defense in the paint, get someone to compromise, and you'd better be open. You better get open and you better hit the shot. Like, that is the beauty of what Buddy Hield has done the last couple of games. And you're going to have to go back, like we said at the start of this, to the Jimmy Butler who had the 27 usage. You know what I mean? To the Jimmy Butler who almost controlled a third of the possessions for the Miami Heat and averaged, 26, 6, and 7 during those playoff runs. They're going to need that to survive and just get a game out of the next three. I just think, like you said at the start of this, you've got a game in bag, so you don't have to rush Steph Curry back, even if you wanted to, right? I don't think they would anyway. Just to get one game out of the next three. And then you get to game five back in Minnesota where, okay, we've won in this building before. And after game five, this is important for people to know. Maybe I should have said this at the top. There's a 3-day break between game five and game six in San Francisco. And for an older team that's been playing every other day for the past more than week or so, and this is physically and emotionally exhausting, and you got an injury that you need to recover from, that will be huge. As long as this series is not over by game six, baby, I think we got problems.
Man, that's huge. I didn't even know that. So,
because the Valkyries will play on the 16th or something like that. So then they just gave them the extra day on the back end of it, as opposed to, you can't rush them back anyway.
That is very convenient for an old team like the Warriors. So I guess that's more onus on the Wolves to get it together. I got no words for this, because I feel like at this point, Jimmy has done enough to show that, like, his relationship with certain players kind of transcends basketball in a lot of ways, but it just translates on the court afterwards. And I don't know, just looking at the numbers, man, like, he had Jimmy Butler pass to Buddy Hield the most last night. He turned eight of his points came from Jimmy Butler. That chemistry is definitely notable. And it's why Buddy is probably playing with the confidence that he is right now, because someone of Jimmy's stature has kind of pulled him to the side, be like, yo, you're the homie. Like, let's do this. Let's do the things that we can. How can I get the best out of you? And I think that's one way that Jimmy's always challenged other teammates. And some have been receptive, some haven't. And it seems like Buddy is. So it's only been to the benefit of the Warriors. So let's see how game two goes, man. I'm just really curious what adjustments the Wolves will make. I think they're going to definitely be more aggressive in the paint and try to take more advantage of their size and just play more disciplined, because they just lacked it in the last game.
Looney Tunes. That's all. They were Looney Tunes. When we come back, we got to talk about another Looney Tunes series. The Pacers going up 2-0 and Halliburton saying overrated these. Welcome back to The Good Word, Dan Titus. Dan, speaking of Looney Tunes, I present to you the Eastern Conference. I present to you the Indiana Pacers. I present to you where I was with the last minute and 46 seconds left. I'm sitting in the media lounge and at the Target Center eating an expensive $20 meal. I story for another time. And I'm just watching the game on my computer, and Cleveland is grinding this game out, like this must-win game. No Darius Garland, no DeAndre Hunter, no, most importantly, Evan Mobley. And it's just Donovan Mitchell and a bunch of hoos, a bunch of dudes. Like, oh, a minute and 47 seconds left. They go up seven. Like, all right, cool. I can walk to my seat. By the time the saxophonist finishes the national anthem and I walk up to my seat, someone says to me, oh, man, you ain't seen what happened. What you mean what happened? He rewinds his, you know, his apparatus. And he shows me Tyrese Halliburton giving them the beats and then giving them the Sam Cassell dance that he's going to get fined for. Pacers take two games in Cleveland. I don't know what to make of this other than Cleveland, you in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to Tyrese Halliburton, troll of the year with that Pedro Serrano
troll
celebration.
Troll of the year.
Love Major League 2, one of my favorites as a kid. But nah, man, I just don't understand what's going on with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I don't know, maybe it's just the clutch factor of the Pacers. This 8 seconds, scoring 8 points in under a minute, they got that lock. Shouts to Reggie Miller, who had the epic one against the Knicks, I don't know how many years ago that was. Probably like
30 years ago. That was May 7th, 1995, if I remember correctly. Don't ask me why I know that, because I'm ridiculous. That's why.
The basketball historian, Vinny Goodwill, ladies and gentlemen. off the dome, too. May 7th, 1995. Crazy. But yeah, man, I was trying to go through it and look at how many games any team has won with Donovan Mitchell in the playoffs with him scoring 40 between, you know, the Jazz and what we've seen with the Cavs. And I think I've only seen one win, one of six games he scored 40 that they have won. And I did think that speaks to, that's what the Pacers want. You want one person to beat you. You cut off everybody else and let him play hero ball. That late game implosion, I mean, I think that's just unfortunate, you know, that some calls went their way. Aaron Nesmith, that tip slam off the free throw was crazy. And then to get the offensive foul right after that, those momentum swings, it's just crazy how quickly that momentum was lost for the Cavs. And shout out to Halliburton. He made a great shot. Onions go home. They're up 2-0. They're now 16-2 over their last 18 games at home. So this is going to be trouble for the Cleveland Cavaliers going forward. And even if you get Evan Mobley and Darius Garland and DeAndre Hunter back, you're still crawling out of a 2-0 deficit. Not many teams have been successful coming out of that.
I think for a minute, it gets really glossed over because we are in the age of Nikola Jokic. But Donovan Mitchell was literally on the verge of a 50-10 playoff game. And the Cavs would have needed every red-ass ounce of production that he had to give. And, you know, he had that dunk in the first half that made him look like Dwayne Wade 2005. And he was hitting the floor hard. Like, every possession in the second half was difficult. They were loading up on him. You know, like, oh, Max Strus, you want to beat us? Cool. Ty Jerome, you're not going to beat us because you can't hit a shot. Nope. There was nowhere for him to turn. He's 48-9. Like, that in itself is amazing. But you look at that Pacers team, man. They're tough, and we look at tough as unskilled. I think we use those two words, Dan, as, you know, polar opposites. But Aaron Nesmith, tough and skilled. Ben Mathurin, really tough. Like, that dude, for all the stuff, he is tough and he is ornery, and he's a guy that probably has the talent to be a starting two guard, but he's coming off the bench for this team for where they are, and he's a young guy hoping to get to, you know, that next contract. Like, that's really easy to be in a selfish spot. Andrew Nembhard, tough dude. Pascal Siakam.
Assists.
Right. Pascal Siakam did not really play that well without Evan Mobley, and they still emerged out of this series. Like, I think there's an interesting point that came up, and I saw it yesterday, Dan. Out of the eight teams remaining in these playoffs, seven of them are the same from last year. The only difference is Golden State is in and the Dallas Mavericks are not. And we don't have to get into the reasons why, but we all know the reason, a big reason why for that. I'm saying that to say the Pacers are not this naive, inexperienced team. Like, they went to the conference finals last year and played Boston very close in damn near all of those games. All those games came down to like a last possession. So they have a lot of experience. You have a coach in Rick Carlisle that knows what he's doing. You got Tyrese Halliburton, who is an honorary son of a bitch. And I say that affectionately. The overrated chance, everything else. Like, wherever his daddy was last night, wherever John Halliburton was, I feel bad for the tables that he was shaking, because he wasn't at the crib. He's watching that somewhere around some people.
Yep. Facts. I think it just speaks. I think we're just constantly sleeping on the Pacers. And I picked the Bucks in the first round. I thought that Damian Lillard would have that effect. Obviously, towards Achilles, can't predict that. But this Pacers team just continues to be slept on. They've been one of the better teams in the second half of the season since the All-Star break. And I think the X factor that you were talking about, Ben Mathurin, him coming out of college, he was more so just like an offensive player. He struggled with getting legitimate playing time because his commitment to defense in Rick Carlisle. Now that you see him locking in and showing that toughness on defense on top of what he can bring offensively, it just makes this team so much more dynamic. And now that, I mean, they had six guys in double figures. The lowest scoring person out of that bunch was Pascal Siakam. The way you're getting the supporting cast to step up and contribute meaningful basketball on both sides, this is going to be a team that's going to be tough to beat. And it's not just the Cavs. This team's looking like they're looking at an Eastern Conference bid here. And the path that they're getting rest. Like, if they can take easy work of the Cavaliers here, I mean, this is going to be a tough team to get through. I'm not going to mail it in on the Cavs yet, right. but this is going to be it's going to be tough. Even if they can get this back to six games and possibly force a game seven, it's going to be tough to get through the Pacers now that they have this two game. They took two games on the road. Like, that's just very tough to do in the playoffs. And for them to do it in that way, steal a game, their confidence is at a sky high level right now. And it's valid. They deserve it.
Look, I'm not sure if Darius Garland's going to be able to make it back. He's got a bad big toe. And everybody's probably thinking, why don't you play on that big toe? What can you do without your toes? You can't run.
If you say significant to any injury, that's not good. Like, elbow, toe, finger, it's significant. You can't just play, bro. Like, it's probably doing a disservice by having him out there, right? Because they're just going to attack him. Like, everybody knows you got a bad foot. I'm just going to go right at you.
You got that affects everything you do. You can't push off. And he's one of those herky-jerky point guards. So everything depends on his dexterity and being able to get to the spots that he needs to get to. I don't know. They've been saying he's been day-to-day for the past four games, so it's really hard to, sort of extract how bad it is for him. You know, are they going to try to shoot it up or whatever the case may be? But between he and Mobley, they need one of those two guys back for game three. I don't think this series is over. I do not believe these Cleveland Cavaliers are capital F frauds. I don't believe they're frauds.
No.
Do I believe that they are going to win the championship? No. I don't think I believe that even when they were healthy. But I don't believe that they are frauds. I don't believe that Donovan Mitchell is a loser. I know some people think, man, does he affect winning as much as you may think? I think in the right situation, he affects winning a little bit more than you think. But you can't put him out there with just anybody or just Jared Allen. Like, you need
Poor Ty Jerome.
One of everything, one for everything, that's bad. But I tend to believe this series is not over. Honestly, and you're going to laugh at me when I say this, all Cleveland has to do is win game three. Even if you lose game four, you win game three, you're back in the series, and then you have a path towards winning this series. Even if it's unlikely, you have a path. I don't think you have to tie it up to give yourself a path. You can go down 3-1 and you have a game five on your home floor. You got to take care of business there. And then there's a game six on the road, and that's where gets real.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the Rockets just showed us that they can do that, right? They were down 3-1. They made their claw back to game seven, and it was close. And I think with the Cavs, they haven't faced that much adversity this year, being that they just dominated, majority of their opponents. But this is going to be the test. And I think at least they have a very good coach that has championship pedigree to kind of ease them back into, like, yo, let's not overreact here. Let's not get down on ourselves. will steadily get crawl back in the series, get one of the next two games, and then maybe you'll get a healthy Evan Mobley, healthier Evan Mobley. Maybe Darius Garland can return by then, and then you have more of a series. But great start for the Indiana Pacers. They're doing exactly what they need to do.
Huge start for the Indiana Pacers. When we come back, we're going to ask Dan, well, I'm going to ask Dan, his three biggest surprises of these playoffs so far. All right, it's time for the last word here with Dan Titus. Dan, it's time for surprises for the first round, the first, you know, few couple of weeks of the playoffs. I'm going to start with you. What is your, I guess, one of your three surprises?
I would say NBA history being made in the divisional round, having four teams go on the road and get a win. I mean, to me, that's, I don't think anybody expect that to happen, especially the overwhelming favorites in the Cavs and the Boston Celtics, for the Knicks and the Pacers to come in there and get those victories. And then you have the Warriors winning with Steph Curry leaving in the second quarter. Just absolutely crazy. And I think it speaks to a bigger thing of, like, all this year, what were they talking about in the media? NBA sucks. The ratings are terrible. No one likes the threes. We're getting, like, probably the best playoffs that I can in recent memory. I turn to you because you definitely know. I was trying to remember, what was the last time you felt this way about the playoffs? Like, yo, competitiveness meets the thrilling endings of these games and just the surprise factor of them.
Not in a long time. I think the COVID years kind of completely skewed what we thought this was supposed to be. Like, we went basically 3 years without, or two full years without normal playoffs. Right. True. 20 and 21 made things really weird. But from the standpoint of, you know, the tax aprons and everything else and legislating parity, that means teams are a lot more evenly matched. Like, even Golden State and Minnesota, 48 and 49 wins, but they're the 6 and 7 seeds. So they're not your traditional 6 and 7 seeds that have had, you know, upsets. They're really good quality teams. So there's really good and quality matchups across the board. Mine is, I'm not going to say that these two players, I won't say that these two players are losers. I won't say that, because they're not. And I'm not saying it to be, like, backhanded. But Julius Randle and Russell Westbrook are doing their best to reshape their reputations across the league. I will say, I thought Russell Westbrook was done. I thought he was finished. When I saw him play in that playoff series last year for the Clippers, his hometown team, against Dallas, and get played off the floor, where you couldn't play him because he couldn't shoot. You couldn't play him because he wasn't as willing a defender. You couldn't play him because he couldn't make good decisions. And all of a sudden, you sprinkle this Joker juice on him and you too shall be healed. This feels like the Pat Robertson stuff on the internet where you send him $1,000 and he sends you some magic water. This what it feels like for Russell Westbrook, like he has revitalized his career in such a way, especially when one of the reasons that Michael Malone got fired was an over-reliance on Russell Westbrook. And I felt like, okay, you got to dial it back some. But there is something to be said, Dan, about a guy who just wants it. And he wants it a lot, and he finds himself, even in the spots where he can be self-destructive, but he has helped win critical playoff games for the Denver Nuggets. He helped win game one against the Clippers. He helped definitely win game one against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And Julius Randle, as I mentioned earlier, he played the most efficient basketball of his career until game one. What's next for you, Dan?
Yeah, to that Russell point, I just think that Russ's self-awareness in that game set after the game seven of just saying, like, yo, this is me. You're going to get me scoring. You're going to get hustled. You're going to get turnovers. Like, you're going to get all that. That's me putting all of me into the game. And, you know, to get that game one win, to make that pass, I think in years past, he could have possibly pulled up and taken that shot. But he saw Aaron Gordon on the wing, passed it to him. Night.
Everybody thought Russ is going to take this layup, this go one on three. Everybody thought that. Everybody, so, people were cheering for it, like willing, like do it. And it was like,
yeah,
smart basketball play.
the redemption arc for him, and you're right, the Julius Randle in the first round, I think he just quieted all the haters that said he can't be efficient and is this a ball hog and a disaster in the playoffs. So I think that those are great ones. My second one would probably be the discourse around Jalen Green and the Houston Rockets needing to blow it up after losing. Mm. I think we are too quick to just throw away young teams and players specifically that may struggle in what was his first playoff experience to just say, oh, go get a star. I don't think getting Kevin Durant at this stage that
it doesn't fix you.
Honestly hasn't won anything since he's left the Warriors makes the Houston Rockets better. And if you look at a lot of the teams that have built from the ground up, the Boston Celtics held on to a majority of their draft picks until eventually it was that time to go get that star. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's that time to get that star yet. I think you could still ride this out with Jalen Green a little bit more. He got better this year. Sure, the on-off data doesn't suggest that he's makes a winning impact. But I think behind the scenes, I think you have to give the Houston Rockets some credit. We don't know what that does for chemistry and having Jalen Green in that locker room. They're building this together. They invested in the number two pick. I don't think you just throw that away because you went seven games with a very good defensive team like the Warriors. I just think the conversation has been too quick for me.
Yeah, in the same vein, and my third one is similar to that one, just in the Eastern Conference. I agree with you that we pressed the fast forward button way too fast, although I'm not sure about Jalen Green. I got questions. I got real questions.
It hasn't been great. I'm saying the kid is 23 years old. Like, we can't just – I get it.
I don't have questions about Amen Thompson. I don't have as many questions about Aparin Şengün. No. I have questions about Jalen Green. So I'm going to say I have questions. Now, my number two thing is I was hoping that these playoffs were going to be the tour de force – Jason Tatum takeover. If there was a moment to be a moment, right? The Celtics are about to undergo new ownership, and there's rumors about this team being broken up because it's going to be too expensive. I thought Tatum was going to take the playoffs by the scruff of its neck and say, LeBron, you don't matter. Steph, you don't matter. Jokic, you don't matter. Shea, you don't matter. This is my league now. And he hasn't done that. Dribble, 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 step back. Dribble, 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 turnover. Like, it's not saying that he can't get there or he can't do it, but everybody said he was so motivated after the Olympics and Steve Kerr did him wrong and everything else. I'm going to tell y'all something. Y'all wanted to win the gold medal and you won it on the strength of Steph Curry losing his mind in the gold medal game. You ain't got time to be messing around with dribble, 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 step back. You don't. You don't have time to be messing around with that. And clearly Jason Tatum has not figured out how to make the game easier for himself. And maybe that changes. Like, he could go and drop 50 on OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges and everything else. But to this point, shooting like 41% from the field and shooting an ungodly low number from three right now, I just expect more out of someone who's supposed to be right at the center and prime of his career, shooting 33 from three, excuse me, on nine attempts, almost 10 attempts a game, shooting 42 from the field. He's got to play better, and I'm surprised that he hasn't.
He's got to do less, I think, at this point, man. And you're right, the dribble, dribble, step back. You're not Kobe, bro. As much as you want to recreate
Kobe
those
system, baby. The Kobe system.
At every single moment he tries to recreate it, like, just stop. Take the ball to the rack. Utilize your size. Take advantage of the mismatches. Make the game easier for yourself, not harder. You don't need to be shooting contested threes at every beckoning moment. Because it just, I don't know. Jalen Brown figured it out. Like, he tries, he gets those little turnarounds in the paint all the time in the mid-range. And I was like, why doesn't Tatum do that more? So I feel that there's still plenty of time for him to recapture that and figure it out, but we'll see how it goes.
What's your number three?
Number three probably ties into what we were talking about before and just the surprising play of Buddy Hield. I don't think anyone projected him to have the impact that he's made at this stage in his career. He's always been a lights out 3-point shooter, like one of the best ever. But at this, the impact that he's doing on both ends, I think, is very surprising. And then also I would say more about Aaron Gordon has always been solid, but I think just the impact that he's made in terms of winning games, you know, he hit the, I mean, the tip of the buzzer was one of the craziest things that's ever happened in playoff history. But then also to hit that three-pointer. And just his ascent of this postseason, averaging 19.7 rebounds. And what, you know, happened, you know, obviously in his personal life, taking his nephews in and just committing to being in the gym all the time, I think it shows. And it's, I think that's just one of the more surprising, better storylines that the NBA needs to probably talk about more.
It's been it's been very pleasant in the ways that we talk about a lot of things that are unpleasant. It's been something that the NBA should really, really celebrate. Third thing for me, I was really surprised at how well the Detroit Pistons and their fans acquitted themselves in the first round. If Isaiah Stewart is not hurt, they beat the Knicks. If Jaden Ivey is not hurt, they demolish the Knicks in round one.
Yeah. Demolish.
They would have mollywopped the New York Knicks, an old school 1995, take your Reebok pumps off your feet, mollywopped. Instead, we got to hear all these New York fans all over talking about Madison Square Garden is the Mecca. I mean, I ain't gonna lie, y'all. A game at Madison Square Garden is kind of live. I ain't gonna lie to y'all on that one. MSG, especially in May, is kind of live. MSG in December is live, all right? I ain't gonna lie to y'all on that one. But the way that franchise picked itself up in a year's time and came within a bad call in one game and a Jalen Brunson three in another game of arguably winning that series itself, I'm with you when you talk about the Houston Rockets. You don't have to blow everything up. Oh, let's go get Devin Booker. Oh, let's go get the next guy. You can let it simmer. You can let it build. You can see where you are a year from now. And if your growth has been stunted, then you go in and go all in. But that's it's still a big surprise for me. There's other things, but that's where I sit as of right now. Round two is underway. My man, Dan Titus, thanks for joining me, man. Really appreciate you, bro.
Always, Ben.
Thanks to Dan Titus for joining us today. Thanks to the producer, Dakota, and the entire team behind the scenes that helps put together this podcast. I may be back in a couple of days with a very special guest, a golden special guest, in a couple of days for the next episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.